magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Wednesday, June 12th, 2019. Special guest in the studio, Kathleen Jennings, joined by Tuesday and Wednesday co-host Mary Ann Simpkins.
Oh, my, no.
Yes, the crowds are going wild.
People are going to tune in just to hear you do that.
Yeah, oh, Jason, what, last Monday made so much fun of it. But I grew up, there was this guy, a friend, and we always say, oh, great job, and the crowd's going wild.
Oh, you did it again.
Yeah, so there was always the crowd. The crowd's going wild.
Oh,
well. So anyways, or he'd say, he or I had that tendency, yeah, we did this, we did this. And he said, who's the we? And I would say, me and the crowd.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
word.
I've carried that for 40 years.
I think I'm glad I didn't know you then.
Oh. Well, I'm glad I know you. In fact, you're one of our prized content contributors.
Oh, yes, well, you are. Thank you.
We're going to have you read another story. In fact, it's been wonderful the last few weeks with the media coverage and honoring the vets. I got a kick out of that one 90-something-year-old veteran that was flirting with President Trump's wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, if I was just 20 years younger, it's
he
like, well,
that, right
that puts you at like 79 or something. She's like 45 or 46.
Yeah. He said it right in front of the president, right in front of her husband.
Yeah. That's right.
I guess it's better in front of her husband than not.
He was having a good time.
Yes, he was.
But some of the Memorial Day messages and those that were given out, I know Pastor Jason did that, and just the spirit of everyone honoring the vets and the anniversaries and last week. And so I know this is a little time sensitive. It would have been a great reading last week, but we wanted to bring you in because it's a great story. We want to continue to honor our vets and those that serve and those that are serving, and just a time to appreciate the sacrifice that so many make and are making and have made.
I think we need to honor them every day in the things that we say and in our attitudes. Yeah. And I remember reading a little item that said, be the kind of American that the soldiers who perished were proud to die for.
Mm. Oh my, that's just touching. That's profound.
I thought it was.
It makes you really sit up and think.
Who wrote that?
I don't know. Okay. Someone.
Author unknown.
I read that little little bit and it makes you think, you know, be that kind of person.
Well, you're right. We should keep that in mind all the time. I will say last Thursday, there were so many things said and so many things shown, you know, on the news and on television that were just inspiring. I mean, they were just profound. Even just the pictures again of those soldiers rushing that beach, you just sit there flabbergasted at the heroic bravery of those people.
Well, if you follow Kathleen's many, many, many posts, you'll see some of those recollections and some of those photographs and such. I was thinking of the movie Saving Private Ryan. Isn't that kind of the juxtaposition of the very end where, you know, he's looking and where the people saved him and he was thinking about, you know,
what
they did for him and how he wanted to live for them, if you will.
Oh, yeah. I think it's something we need to keep in mind all the time. It's very easy to end up being very complacent. I've had a life that's been very easy, really. I have not been in the military. I have not had to make some very difficult decisions and make them in a split second.
Yeah.
And that's something that these men have had to do.
And their families living through times of rationing. You know, we go to the grocery store, everything we'd ever need or want, it's always available
the
time. Yeah, right. Most of the things
shouldn't get.
But many, or the preponderance of our listeners, they lived through the times where you know, you were rationed how much sugar, flour,
whether
you could purchase certain things because the war effort was the focus for some of those years. And then just all that goes into getting ready for war and then post-war and such.
Well, when I went through some of my parents' things after they had passed away, I found ration cards.
Oh, wow.
I found the small Bible that my father had been given when he was in the military and had an inscription in it from then-President Franklin Roosevelt. And those were given out to all the military.
back I in found, the days when right. you could still hand out Bibles to the
That's
military.
That's right. Good point. Good yes. point, Mark.
And I found some letters that my dad's family had written. It really takes you back. And then I listened to the music. Now, I grew up watching a lot of World War II era movies and listening to that music.
You were very, very, very young at that time.
Well, as I said, yeah. I grew up.
He's trying to give you that.
Yeah. I grew up doing that.
Sure. Oh.
Doing that.
Yeah.
And I know when I started babysitting, my parents explained that I was there to watch the children, and when it was time for them to go to bed, that was fine. You put them in bed. But I had to stay awake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back in that day, there wasn't a whole lot on television or something to keep you awake.
Right, right.
So I would go, and usually after that 10 o'clock news or that last news program, they'd have a movie. And so I watched all these movies, and they were old movies. Most of them were probably from the 40s, maybe 30s. And I grew to love those movies. You could tell the ones that were made during the war because they were the ones that were encouraging, encouraging people to stay strong. And when I think of what Hollywood does now, it was such a difference.
Well, I just thought that that one phrase, I think it was the name of his speech that the president gave. He says to all those people, the veterans were behind him, in front of him, he says, "Your legend will never die." I love
that's
that.
Right.
Your
that's
legend.
Right.
They were legendary.
Right.
Absolutely.
They got many books, The Greatest Generation.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And when you talk to the... Veterans.
We're having like a little fireside chat here.
Yeah, we are. We got to be sure to read this wonderful article, too. But
when
yes,
you
please
when
keep
you
talking.
When you talk to the veterans, they're very humble about what they've done.
Right, right.
They, to a man, the veterans I have interviewed that have been World War II veterans have said, "I wasn't the hero."
Uh-huh, they all say that.
"It was the men who died."
Right.
That is true, and they all say it, but it's also true that the ones who came home helped forge a great society.
Yes, they did. Absolutely.
Yeah, they did.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They didn't just sit back.
No, not at all.
And many of them faced big obstacles.
Yes, they did.
Both physically and mentally.
Yes, they did.
Faced big obstacles.
In case you've been away from the radio for the last year or so and haven't tuned in to hear our Prime Life Times in Review on Wednesday, Kathleen Jennings has been writing a series called From Generation to Generation, many times focusing on World War II veterans, Vietnam. Did you do a Korean War veteran once or somebody?
I have
maybe
interviewed.
Served?
It's coming
okay,
up.
That one's coming
Most
up.
Most of them right now have been the Vietnam era, could be Korean era, and then there have been some for World War II.
So it's been a great series, and I know when I've stopped in various locations delivering papers or seeing veterans or people at McDonald's or different sites, you can tell they're veterans and they're reading the paper, and I think you've created a little following of people that have really enjoyed this.
Yeah, you have.
And I think another idea we were talking about is maybe something with the farmers in mind.
Yeah, that'd be great, too.
I think we have a lot of different listeners that love reading this from cover to cover and are appreciating it, and we continue to expand and have great growth, but your series, it's our audience, it's our listenership, and it's our readership, and I love this, From Generation to Generation, just tying us all together, because we stand on their shoulders, and they stand on the other generation's shoulders, and you know,
and that particular turning back Hitler, I mean, that whole particular thing changed the course of history, totally.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, and as I read more about this, I see God in every bit of it. I mean, after all, while this invasion was going on, Hitler was sleeping.
That's amazing, isn't
it? He had a habit of sleeping till 10:30 in the morning, and so he was asleep, and the people there were afraid to wake him up
and
let him know.
And somebody was telling me this the other day. I have a small group that meets on Thursday, so it was actually last week. But the weather on that day was so specific. Otherwise, because of the landing and everything, it could have happened like 2 weeks later, and that would have...
It would not have worked.
Yeah, just that little window of time.
That's
I think
right.
that was similar. Something happened with George Washington with the weather.
Yeah.
And how, I don't know if it was crossing the Delaware, but a very similar thing where if it didn't happen on that day, it could have turned out much differently.
Right.
And yeah, sadly, there were many casualties and all
goodness.
That. But
yes.
It could have been so much worse. And it was rather miraculous.
And it would have been. Yeah. It would have been a lot worse.
And there was so much you could have written about and talked about and recounted. And you kind of wanted to focus on, with this story, some not as well-known parts of...
Yes. Well, I mean, I could have said how many people died. And yes, but you can usually get those stories anywhere. But some of these, especially when you talk about the deception that was used, because it was so critical.
Yeah.
It was so absolutely critical to success.
Read to us, Kathleen.
Okay.
It sounds like we got to get this done. This is great.
Before June edition of the Prime Lifetimes, joining with us is Kathleen Jennings to read her story.
Surprise, loyalty, deception, and courage. The sun was shining and the breeze was gentle as John and I walked along the beautiful beach. We had come here as part of a World War II heritage tour, and this beach, Omaha Beach, with its rocky cliffs and sandy bluffs, had been the site of a pivotal battle on that day in 1944, known as D-Day. As I looked up at the cliff tops of Point du Hoc, I found myself trying to visualize the U.S. Army Rangers tasked with landing below the cliffs and climbing up 100 feet under continuous hostile fire. The picture became much clearer when I looked down from the top of the cliff and realized just how clear the line of sight had been for the German snipers and machine gunners in the clifftop bunkers. There was no sunshine or gentle breeze on June 6, 1944, when the Allies crossed the English Channel and landed on the beaches of Normandy, France, to begin Operation Overlord, the liberation of Western Europe from Nazi control. Just hours before, the timing of the invasion had still been in doubt. Originally planned for a day earlier, there had been a last-minute delay due to changing weather conditions. General Dwight D. Eisenhower had agreed to a 24-hour pause, but the window of opportunity for action was closing rapidly. Rain and high winds were headed their way, and the next plausible date for a successful invasion was about 2 weeks away. Trusting the accuracy of his weather forecasters, who predicted a short lull in the storm, and not wanting to lose the element of surprise, Eisenhower gave the order to proceed. The Germans, whose own forecasters had predicted that storms would continue until mid-June, were taken by surprise. Believing an imminent Allied invasion impossible, many commanders left their coastal defense positions to participate in nearby war games. German Field Marshal Erwin Rommel had even returned home to Germany to spend time with his family. He actually took his wife a birthday present of a new pair of shoes. One of the paratroopers in a transport plane over northern France in the early morning hours of June 6, 1944, was General Matthew Ridgway. After landing in a pasture, he thought he saw someone or something moving. Calling out the challenge password, Flash, he hoped it was another American paratrooper. A friendly soldier's response would be Thunder. Ridgway must have been pleasantly surprised when the answer was Moo. It was a cow. And he knew it wasn't a minefield if a cow was in the pasture. Setting up his command post in a nearby apple orchard, He made contact with as many U.S. soldiers as possible, including his aide, his bodyguard, and his artillery commander. Continually moving from place to place, he directed and encouraged his troop and battalion commanders. After radio communications were established, he could personally direct the advance against the Germans. Later, when asked why he took such personal risks, General Ridgway replied, "Loyalty to the unit must start at the top." Paratroopers were dropped to the east and west of the Normandy landings. These paratroopers, however, were fake, and they were simply intended to deceive the German command, along with the simulated invasion fleets of small ships and aircraft lying off the Pas-de-Calais and the western edge of the real invasion force. Planning for Operation Bodyguard had begun in the summer of 1943, with the objective of leading the Germans to believe that the invasion of Northwest Europe would come much later and at a location different from the one where it was actually planned. The three main goals of Operation Bodyguard were to make the main invasion target appear to be the Pas-de-Calais, to hide the actual date and time of the assault, and to keep German reinforcements in the Pas-de-Calais for at least 2 weeks after the Normandy landings. In order to reinforce the idea of highly regarded General George Patton leading an attack at Calais, the Allies created a large phantom U.S. Army group and broadcast hours of fictitious radio transmissions about troop and supply movements. They deceived Nazi aerial reconnaissance by creating decoy landing craft and inflatable Sherman tanks. Patton stayed in England to give false validity to this hoax. An Australian actor resembling Bernard Montgomery was employed to impersonate the British general and conspicuously appear outside of England to indicate that no attack was imminent. 3 days after the Normandy landing, Spanish businessman Juan Pujol Garcia, a British double agent, fed information to Berlin that Normandy was merely a red herring and the main attack was yet to come at the Pas-de-Calais. His proof was that Patton was still in England. As a result, Hitler delayed moving reinforcements from the Pas-de-Calais to Normandy for 7 weeks. The story of D-Day has many chapters and many authors. One certain thing was the courage, fortitude, ingenuity, and discipline of those who fought for freedom and turned the tide of World War II. Now, on the 75th anniversary of that fateful day in Normandy, I'm reminded of words President Ronald Reagan spoke at a ceremony commemorating the 40th anniversary of Normandy invasion. "Today, in their memory, and for all who fought here, we celebrate the triumph of democracy. We reaffirm the unity of democratic people who fought a war and then joined with the vanquished in a firm resolve to keep the peace."
Kathleen Jennings currently lives in Mahomet, Illinois, a watercolor artist who loves history. She researches personal stories of wars Americans have fought for our freedom. You can contact her at Kathleen@WatchmanOnTheWall.com, Kathleen@WatchmanOnTheWall.com. Thank you, Kathleen. And you included a couple photographs. Where did you find these photographs?
John and I took the one in Normandy, 2014.
Of the cemetery.
At the cemetery. But no, the others, the troops, American troops approaching Omaha Beach at Normandy, that was taken during the invasion, and the troops scaling. And I wasn't alive then, Mark.
Well, I didn't mean that you took them.
Yeah, I didn't mean that.
Like, where did you find them?
You provided them, yes. Yes.
I am glad you weren't there.
Thank you for clarifying.
Sorry, anybody
that.
Had to be.
Yes. Yeah. You know,
but so grateful.
You know, one thing that I've kind of chuckled at about that the British did way back in 1942, as early as 1942, they asked people who had vacationed in France to send them postcards, pictures, and things of the vacation area, the vacation spots, and the coastline.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the people did that. Uh-huh. So they used these to look and to help decide where the landing was actually going to take place.
Oh, interesting.
So. I know I've seen a documentary on those inflatable Sherman tanks and all the different things they set up, like as a decoy and to fool the Germans and such. It's fascinating how that all came together.
The Spanish man, businessman.
The double agent?
The double agent was known as Garbo. And he then died after the war, shortly after the war. But he didn't really die.
Oh,
He did that himself. I mean, he worked with that, and people thought he had died all those years ago. But there was a journalist who, years later, thought, you know, I'd really love to talk to him.
Mm.
And so he kept searching and
digging.
And he was alive. He had a family. Mm. And eventually did go back to Normandy to see what the area was like.
Wow. Mm. What can one say, Mark?
Yeah, really.
I mean,
so indebted and so thankful for those that have gone before us, those that sacrificed their lives and their families and all that they gave to allow us to enjoy the freedoms we each and every day. So as a reminder, if you see a veteran today or their family, those that are serving our country now, honor them and appreciate them.
You know, last week, I'll just say this really briefly. Last week, they had in the news that one of the women who shows people around the cemetery is the granddaughter of a French woman who was huddled in her little cottage with her little baby because her husband was part of the French resistance and he was gone. And a soldier knocked on the door and she was terrified and she opened it and he said, I'm an American, I'm here to help you.
Wow.
And her granddaughter was at the ceremonies last week.
Very nice.
Helping people.
Mm. Well, and there were also a lot of people there who lived in that area that helped the troops.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, team effort. We'll close out with a portion of a song recommended by Kathleen Jennings titled We'll Meet Again by Vera Lynn. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns, Marianne Simpkins, and Kathleen Jennings with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you and have a great day and night.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know where. Again, don't know where.